What's particularly different in developing countries, in particular in cities in developing countries such as in Chennai, is that sleep conditions are dramatically different compared to sleep conditions for the average American or person in Europe.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. If you could get just a little bit more sleep, would it improve your work? It's a question we have all asked ourselves from time to time, and sleep scientists are unanimous on this point. Most of us sleep far too little. If we could only sleep just a little bit more, we're told, we'd be healthier, happier, and more productive. It would have no cost, no side effects, it wouldn't need a prescription, and so it would have the potential to dramatically improve your life. Now imagine you work a low-income job in Chennai. On average, you get 5.6 hours of sleep a night, and you're woken 32 times. A team of economists from the University of Pennsylvania, Harvard, and MIT have recently conducted an experiment to test whether increasing sleep in Chennai really does help, with surprising results that'll tell us a lot about the difference between sleep in laboratories in the United States and sleep for low-income workers in a developing world. Now, Gautam Rao and Frank Schilbach, two of the five researchers, are with me today. Gautam and Frank, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Tim. Thanks so much.
Frank, the findings of laboratory science on the benefits of sleep, they are remarkable, aren't they?
Yes, indeed. This is a very impressive literature that shows impacts of sleep on a vast range of outcomes measured in the lab. In particular, cognitive function, attention, memory, inhibitory control, and so on. Essentially, your brain works a lot less if you're sleep deprived. This is a huge body of evidence that consistently shows such effects. Importantly, this literature focuses on inducing acute sleep deprivation among people who often have high quality sleep and measures these outcomes in the lab. That's to say, it gets healthy sleepers into the lab and sleep deprives them and looks then at the impact of how people do on usually computer tasks measures in sleep laboratories.
We're looking at something slightly different here. We're looking at the low-income workers in Chennai who are sleeping so little. But why are they sleeping so little and why are they sleeping so badly?
So there's a couple of numbers you need to keep in mind here. The first is how much sleep are people actually getting? Now, the way we're able to measure that is by having people wear, you know, these wristwatch-like devices. They're kind of like a Fitbit, like these fitness trackers or your Apple Watch, but they are made for clinical sleep research, and they infer whether you're asleep or not by how much you're moving. Now, they give you a bottom line number, which is how many minutes over the night were you actually asleep? And that's where we find that this sample of individuals, and we have two different samples. We think they're not exactly representative, but it seems broadly true that people sleep very little. They're getting about 5.5 hours of sleep per night on average. Almost all of them are getting less than prescribed amounts from doctors. But the really surprising thing to us was that that's not because they are not spending enough time in bed. They're actually spending 8 hours or so in bed every night. And so what's going on is that they are tossing and turning and waking up multiple times a night. And so what they have is very inefficient sleep. They spend 8 hours a night in bed, but they only squeeze out of it about 5.5 hours of physical sleep per night. And why that is, I think if you look at the conditions in which people live, that gives you a bit of a hint. So there's just a lot of physical discomfort. There's crowding, there's heat, there's light, there's noise, there's mosquitoes. And if you ask people about barriers to their sleep, they also mention psychological factors such as stress and worries and so on. That's not to say that people don't have some of the same self-control problems with sleep that we do. So people also report, you know, watching TV late and the like. But they're actually spending 8 hours trying to sleep and squeezing very little actual sleep out of it.
So there is clearly huge potential for a benefit here. Before you did your experiments, I think you asked a group of experts what benefits they thought that these people would get. What did they predict for you?
Yes, exactly. So we ask about 100 experts, these are economists and sleep researchers, about mm-hmm. what they thought the effects would be. Primarily, we ask about the effects of increased night sleep on work outcomes, in particular, how much data entry workers would produce, like how many hours they would work and how much they would type and how much money they would earn. There was a pretty consistent picture in the answers of these experts that most experts would say workers would increase their output. On average, they predicted about a 7% increase in output in data entered. And most people also thought that people would work more, in fact, so like spend more time at the office and spend more time typing. To be clear, this is very much also what we predicted ourselves, in a sense. Like, if anything, we predicted that the increases in output and work overall would be larger than what experts had predicted.
Considering the marginal gains that you get from many other quite costly interventions, this must have been quite exciting to imagine that there is this potential here.
Yes, indeed. So if you look at other interventions, including increases in piece rates, when you just pay workers more, if you double their earnings or wage often, workers tend to increase their output by 5-10%, which sort of suggests it's really hard to increase people's productivity. It's tricky to increase workers' output through other interventions as well. So in a way, it was very encouraging to hear that experts thought that sleep would be important to increase productivity. In fact, that's kind of what motivated us in the first place. We thought, here, people sleep so terribly, people have very low sleep to start with. And in part from introspection, it's really hard to function on 5-6 hours of sleep per night. And so there must be high returns of increasing people's sleep for work outcomes, in particular work outcomes that are very attention heavy, that require a lot of cognitive function, which is precisely what sleep researchers think should be important for the impact of sleep.
If I can just jump in on that, we had this panel of experts, but more generally, there's a lot of popular science work on sleep nowadays, and experts have written best-selling books that say the economy will be revolutionized, productivity will go up, health will improve. You know, they do predict, like serious people do predict, that there will be huge returns to sleeping more. And this is what, you know, our project is trying to test in the field.
When you read these books or read this research, it kind of makes you feel bad and you want to go to sleep immediately, because you think it's like, if you don't get enough sleep, if you don't sleep 7-8 hours, you'll be less productive, less happy, and less healthy person.
I was exactly that person. I read one of these books and I started going to sleep an hour earlier, at least for a little while I did anyway. Tell me about your experiment. How did you conduct the experiment to increase night sleeping for these people in Chennai?
So we had two treatments that tried to get people to sleep more at night. In both the treatments, people received information about the benefits of sleep. They received feedback on their actual level of sleep, because one thing we know from sleep science, and that was true in our sample too, is that people don't realize how poorly they sleep sometimes. And so telling them, here's how much physical sleep you're actually getting, giving them daily feedback on that, as well as tips to how to improve your home sleep environment. The things I just described are essentially what cognitive behavioral therapy for insomniacs does. And so we did this. But we also gave everyone physical devices to improve their home sleep environment. So a variety of mattresses that they could choose to take home, because lots of individuals in our setting would otherwise be sleeping on a simple piece of cardboard on the floor. We'd give them pillows and blankets and earplugs and eye shades and curtains and a range of devices like that. Table fans if they wanted them. And people could choose what was useful for them. They could take as many as they liked. And then there was another treatment that got all of that, but additionally got modest daily financial incentives. People typically earn something like $0.50 a day extra from our payments to incent them to sleep more. So we said, if you can increase your sleep compared to your baseline sleep, you can make a bit of extra money. So those were our treatments to increase sleep. And in fact, they were quite effective. And on average, between the two treatments, they increased the amount of sleep you got each night by about 30 minutes.
This is quite a complex experiment you've got going on here.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, this project took many, many years and lots of piloting because nothing quite like this, we think, had been run before. As Frank was telling you, a lot of this work on sleep is typically done in very controlled sleep lab environments. And we were trying to bridge the lab and the field. So part of the reason we're able to do this is because of these technological breakthroughs, which allow us to measure sleep fairly well, not as well as people would measure it in the lab, but fairly well, 95% accuracy compared to that, we think, in people's natural environments. But then we also set up a data entry platform where people were entering data, where you could observe their productivity and their labor supply in a fine-grained way. And we additionally ran a bunch of behavioral experiments or lab experiments to measure people's preferences and decision-making, because we hypothesized that being sleep-deprived may reduce your self-control, may perhaps change your social preferences or the like. And so we were trying to measure all of these things together, and really this required a fantastic and really a very large team. So Frank and I collaborated on this project with Heather Schofield at the University of Pennsylvania, with two terrific PhD students, Pedro Bessone and Matti Toma at MIT and Harvard. But importantly, with a large team of RAs working with IFMR and JPAL in India. So, you know, we have a team with research managers, a number of RAs who dedicated years of their lives to this project, as well as surveyors. And so it's really a big team operation. And part of the reason we're able to do this is that Frank and Heather, later joined by me, set up a lab in Chennai in India, specifically to be able to do work like this, to do work at the intersection of behavioral and development economics. And we've, over the years, built up a lot of expertise, but this really was a tough one to pull off.
It's an interesting insight into how the experimental approach to economics does really involve a lot of hard work, and there are no easy victories here, are there? You did, however, achieve your first objective, which was to increase the amount of sleep that people were getting at night. Did this then show the improvements in the dimensions you really wanted to measure?
Not at all. We were shocked to see initially that essentially there's no significant positive impacts of night sleep that we perhaps expected. This is a large range of outcomes, as Gautam described, including work outcomes. This would be like, how much do people produce? How many hours do people work? How much do they earn at the end of the day? Including decision-making outcomes. This is how much money do they save? Measures of their preferences, how they react to risk and time preferences, or how nice they are in experimental tasks with respect to others. It involves health outcomes, how healthy they feel, but also whether they miss days due to health, their blood pressure, and so on. So we measured a range of health outcomes as well, including psychological well-being, how happy people are, how depressed they are, how satisfied they are with their life. So for none of these outcomes, and including outcomes that are sort of these measures of attention that sleep researchers would use themselves to detect the effects of sleep, we found no effects whatsoever. In fact, we found some evidence of negative effects on labor supply, of how many minutes or hours people work, which in a way makes a lot of sense because people spend more time in bed. In fact, they spend quite a bit of more time in bed, so they have just less time in the day, and some of that time needs to come from somewhere. So some of that time went into reduced time at work.
Now, this must have been an incredibly disappointing result. You did, however, run a parallel experiment to this, didn't you, in which people could take a nap at work during the day. Did you have better outcomes for that?
Yeah, so there was a striking contrast in the effects we found from increased night sleep and offering naps at work. So if we gave a randomized group an option to take a nap at work, we found positive effects on productivity. So they got more done in the same amount of time. Their psychological well-being improved, so measures of depression, you know, happiness, life satisfaction, and so on improved. They actually seemed to save more money from their daily earnings. Their willpower seemed to go up as measured by what behavioral economists call their present bias. There were just a range of positive outcomes from napping. And this was quite interesting because this was less additional sleep per day. This was on average about 13 more minutes of sleep per day. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you slept 6 minutes less that night if you took a nap in the day. So the total amount of additional sleep you were getting in a day was much smaller than the increase we induced in night sleep, and yet we saw all these positive effects.
How can we explain this?
Here's what we think is going on. One of the crucial differences between the naps and the night sleep is that the naps were offered at work. So, you know, there was sort of a nap cabin at work, and one thing that we observe there is, you know, there are these measures of quality of your sleep that sleep scientists have come up with, you know, like the sleep efficiency I mentioned, but also the number of awakenings or interruptions you have to your sleep per minute and so on. and the naps were higher quality than the night sleep. Remember, the crucial thing about the night sleep was people are getting very little sleep effectively, and so that's why we thought there would be big effects. But a difference is that it's also just really low quality sleep, and the naps were higher quality. And we think we have some exercises in the paper trying to say how much of the difference between the effect of naps and night sleep can we explain because of this quality. And we think a substantial share is explained by that. But surely it's also true, and you know, part of the difference could be that these are just different things biologically, and you know, it's a different part of the circadian clock, and naps may just be quite an effective thing in general.
We're sort of assuming that people are making bad decisions because of the constraints that they have, and that if we just ease those a little bit, then they would behave differently. Is there a possibility that the amount of sleep that people are taking at night is a rational decision? They're optimizing pretty well?
Yes, indeed. So a lot of the literature in behavioral development economics is very much the hypothesis that there are high return opportunities that people have available to them that they are not engaging in or not making use of for various reasons, including perhaps because they don't necessarily understand the returns to these activities or because of impatience or for similar reasons. Now, we very much went into this project thinking that sleep is another of those types of investments that people are not making, potentially a really important one that would be very cheap to take advantage of. So if only people slept more, there would be these large returns in their lives. They would be happier, healthier, and more productive. Now, it turns out that, like, at least in the short and medium run, our experiment was about a month. So over that period of a month, when people sleep more at nights, we see essentially no positive benefits. If you think now, if you were like a worker in Chennai thinking about should you be sleeping more, if you try that for a while, and often, you know, people don't have the data that we have available. We have data from 450 people in an RCT. If one person tries this, they will likely not see a lot of benefits of sleeping more. They're not more productive. They're not earning more money. They don't have better attention. They don't feel healthier or happier or any way. In contrast, they have less time available during their day. They probably have less time for their kids, less time for work and for other activities, also perhaps for fun activities that they might be doing during the day. So really, in the short and medium run, from the perspective of such a worker, there's no good reason to sleep more as far as they can tell. Now, we cannot rule out the possibility that there are long-run effects of sleep, in particular on outcomes such as health, cognitive function, but perhaps even also productivity and the like. It could be that if you slept more for like a year or two or 5 or 10 years, eventually there would be large effects. So we can't say that in the very long run, these effects might not manifest. And my sense is that likely there will be some of those effects, in particular the health effects that sleep researchers often talk about. But in the short and medium run, we can reject the notion that people, when considering these types of impacts, people are underinvesting in sleep when considering costs and benefits in the short and medium run.
Overall, does your experiment, the enormous amount of effort that you put into it, tell us in the end something about the difference in sleep in the developed world, and especially in sleep labs where, as you say, a lot of this research has been done, and the potential to apply what we learn from that in places like Chennai?
Yes, absolutely. So there are various things we can learn from our study. First, I think we need to be more careful in thinking about how to take the evidence or the insights from the sleep literature, from sleep labs, into field settings in the US and other rich countries, but also in developing countries. It might just be that sleeping in your own bed has different effects than sleeping in a sleep lab or being sleep deprived in a sleep lab. And we need field studies to figure out and learn about what these effects are. Now, what's particularly different in developing countries, in particular in cities in developing countries, such as in Chennai, is that sleep conditions are dramatically different compared to sleep condition for the average American or person in Europe. And that is, sleep quality is really, really low. And many of the things that we learned from the sleep literature are derived from samples of people who have high sleep quality. And so now, if somebody has really low sleep quality, increasing the quantity of sleep just might not have the same effects as you might find in other samples with people with high sleep quality. So that puts at the front and center the question of, like, well, if we think that sleep quality is really important, how do we improve sleep quality? And our study, in fact, does not really answer this question, but it sort of raises the question and the importance of learning about how might we be able to increase sleep quality, and does increasing sleep quality potentially have the effects that one might expect given the sleep literature?
absolutely fascinating application of very interesting science. So Gautam and Frank, thank you.
Thanks very much, Tim.
Thank you so much.
The working paper we have been discussing is called The Economic Consequences of Increasing Sleep Among the Urban Poor. I'm sure you're going to want to read it after listening to that. It is NBER Working Paper 26746. And the authors are Pedro Bessoni, Gautam Rao, Frank Schilbach, Heather Schofield, and Matty Toma. This has been a VoxDev Talk. You can find more of our episodes at voxdev.org. And don't forget to subscribe to VoxDev Talks on your podcast platform.